What's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of the podcast. Today, this episode is all about lifestyle design. So what is lifestyle design? Lifestyle design is creating your dream life, your perfect life. And we're not talking Lambos and $20 million houses. We're talking about what you're doing every single day with your time, what you're eating every single day, where you're living, what you're doing with the 16 hours that you're awake each and every single day. So when it comes to lifestyle design, this is a topic that I've been studying and applying to my life over the last 8 years along my own personal growth journey. And when I would be manifesting and thinking about and executing on daily tasks that create my life by design or lifestyle design, I think about working from home. I think about having a little bit of money in the bank. I think about creating content and exercising and going to the beach and having conversations with people that inspire me to be a better person and having conversations with people that teach me things and having experiences that I'm going to remember forever. So when I think about my life by design or lifestyle design for me, I don't think about having fancy cars and having a multi-million dollar house and maybe not even being a millionaire. But I think about what time I wake up. What does my morning routine look like? What am I eating every single day? Where am I spending my time for 8 hours every single day? What am I doing on the weekends? And what am I working towards? So today, I have a great guest for you guys. His name is Goose McGrath. He is from Australia. And Goose has gone from broke to eight-figure nomad in 5-6 years. And he did it through a few different investment vehicles, one of the biggest ones being real estate in Australia. And I know nothing about real estate in Australia. I barely know anything about real estate in America. But as someone who owns a couple properties himself, I wanted to get Goose on the podcast to learn more about what he did on a daily, weekly, monthly, and yearly basis over the last 6 years to create his life by design. So here's the podcast. If you haven't already, hit subscribe or hit follow or leave a review. Go ahead and do that. Thank you guys so much for the support and thank you guys so much for listening. Now let's get to the episode. Well, listen, I want to thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to hop on the Live Better Now podcast. This podcast is all about mindset, personal growth, and mental health. And how can we live our best life unless we have a little bit of money in the bank and we are financially secure? So I want to get you on the podcast today to talk about personal finance, to talk about real estate. I want to get the answer to the million-dollar question, is it still a good time to buy real estate? Obviously, all these people out there that are listening from their car on the way to work, the price of gas is through the roof. Interest rates are over 8%. The housing market is at all-time highs and rent is even higher. So it's a really tough time for a lot of people, especially that are, you know, living paycheck to paycheck. And that leads me to my first question for you, Goose, is how do people get out of the rat race and go from paycheck to paycheck to making their first 100K?
That's a really, really good question. So just to kind of dovetail in on something you said there about the real estate market. So real estate is fundamentally the best way for 99% of people to build wealth, right? Now, the real estate market in Australia and the real estate market in the US, completely different beasts, in fact, completely different. And we could talk for hours about exactly why that is. And then we can also talk about some macro global stuff as well. Now, 99% of millionaires build their wealth through real estate. 99% of billionaires build their wealth through private equity or business, right? But the reality is there's only like 1% of the population are going to get to that kind of billionaire point. So for most people, the best way to build wealth is real estate. Now, the reason for that is the application of leverage. If you just say, for example, pay cash for real estate and don't use any leverage, there are arguably other assets which might be comparable to that, such as stocks or shares, or, you know, there could be other dividend type assets you might want to get to. Now, The best way for anyone to build wealth, though, is to build some, firstly, to set some really clear goals on what you're trying to achieve, and then to build some high-value skills that are going to support those. Now, learning skills like sales, communication, influence, that's going to help you and set you up no matter what you want to do, because whether or not you choose the path to build wealth specifically through real estate or to build wealth through business, you're going to need to understand how to master your words and how to communicate effectively to help other people see your point of view so that you can get what you want faster, and obviously in a way that's ethical and supports the best interest of the other person as well. So I'd say that's the first step.
You know, things are a lot different now than they were 30 years ago. You know, baby boomers, people that are over 50, 60 years old, they, you know, made anywhere between 30 to 60 grand, which was a good wage 30 years ago when gas was under $1.50 and rent was under $1,000 for a single family home, and you could buy a house for $100,000. But now, don't quote me on these numbers, but we got $11 trillion in credit card debt, over $1 trillion in student loan debt. Housing is unaffordable. You know, there's these rule of thumbs in personal finance where you're supposed to spend less than 40% of your income on housing, right? But that's just, it's really hard these days. I mean, I live in Jupiter, Florida, and a one bedroom is like $2,200 to $2,400. So you got to make 90K to rent the cheapest, smallest rental in my area.
Yes, or change where you're living. So I think one of the biggest problems is how people are measuring success. Right, because a lot of people have got this idea that success is going to be measured in dollars in the bank account, how much status you've got, how many things you accumulate, how much stuff you've got. But the reality is most of us can live an absolutely spectacular life, a truly extraordinary life for literally not that much money. Now, I'm speaking from a context of having had no money. Like about 5 years ago, I was an alcoholic, drug addict, broke, living on my office floor, had nothing going for me, going nowhere in life. I had never worked in real estate, had never really, like, man, I had a business. I thought it was a business. It was a joke. There was no real business there, right? I've been at the bottom, like the bottom. Right, I know
and,
what.
And recently too. This wasn't 30 years ago.
No, this wasn't 30 years ago. When my partner Gabby and I started our business, our current business, which is now a very successful business, four and a half years later. Bear in mind, 5 years ago I was an alcoholic, drug addict. I'm clear now. But when we started our business, we had $5,000 to our name, no safety net, no backup. We didn't know how to do marketing and sales. We'd never really run a business. We'd never worked in the real estate industry before. We didn't have any network. We didn't know any investors. We didn't know anything. And in fact, when we started our business, we had so little money that we had to choose between, say, paying for ads or eating food. And we chose the ads, and we'd walk around the supermarket eating food off the shelves because that was how we were going to eat. So I know what it's like to have nothing. Now I can sit here and I can say, hey, look, we've got a very successful business, one of the fastest growing companies in Australia. We've got 91 team members. You know, we're doing all this kind of stuff. But the reality is I still seek to arbitrage my life to get the best out of it, because what I'm looking for is how to optimize my life for the maximum amount of happiness and fulfillment. And what I can tell you is that if you chase these goals of, you know, financial success or material success, when you actually get to them, you tend to find that they're not as meaningful as you thought they were in the first place. And so the context that you've just shared, yeah, cost of living has gone up massively. Of course, definitely. Fuel prices have gone up a lot. Interest rates have gone up a lot. So you have the ability to change your circumstances to suit the lifestyle that you desire. Now, I have lived a life where I've traveled around literally just with the bag on my back. Like I know what it's like to do that. And I was happy then too. So happiness isn't about more. Happiness is about working out where you derive joy and fulfillment from. Now, a lot of people are going to say, but what about my job? What about this? What about that? And the first level of financial freedom, there are three phases to financial freedom. The first level is financial confidence. Financial confidence doesn't actually require that you have any money. It requires that you adopt a mindset that is going to allow you to find and solve different challenges to secure your place on this earth. Now, whether that be backpacking around Southeast Asia, working in bars, because that's going to give you the freedom that you want, and knowing that you can just pick up a job anywhere, because I've done that too, right? Or whatever it may be, or learning a new skill, or trying your hand at something. Financial confidence starts up here and doesn't require any money. And that's the first step to financial freedom. A lot of people sit here and they say, well, I've got to work out how to make $100,000. It's like, well, do you? That's a really good, really big question. Do you? Because maybe it's $30,000, and maybe you could do that online, and maybe, you know, you could do that from somewhere else where the cost of living is cheaper, and maybe you could live a better life. I'm currently sitting here. overlooking what's dark now, but I just overlooked the sunset over the Andaman Ocean in Thailand from an apartment that most people could probably afford, right? And I'm doing so despite the fact that we've had a whole high degree of success, because there's more to life than just how you spend your money.
Yeah. And that mindset on money is very important. You know, there's a few different perspectives on money. There's the Grant Cardone mentality that you need to 10x your income, you need to 10x your lifestyle, leverage, 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 borrow, 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 refi, refi, refi. And then on the other end of the spectrum, there's the Dave Ramsey mindset, which is, hey, let's be conservative. Let's pay cash for everything. If we're going to buy a house, we're going to do a 15-year fixed mortgage, and we're going to drive a beater or a shitty car, and we're going to pay cash for it, and we're going to invest all of our income in mutual funds. So on that spectrum, where do you feel like you lie?
Definitely on the Grant Cardone end, but I'm going to qualify that a little bit further. So I think debt is fantastic, by the way. I think it's an awesome instrument if you know how to use it. I don't believe that you should be, like, I think one of the stupidest things you can do from a capital allocation perspective is pay for things in cash. Like, it doesn't make sense, particularly if you've got a depreciating asset. Like, it just doesn't make sense. There's too much arbitrage to be had through experience. So even like right now, as I mentioned, I'm in Thailand. I've recently been living in Bali, and I was thinking, like, oh man, I was looking at some like beautiful properties in Thailand. I was like, man, imagine buying this beautiful cliffside mansion and, you know, whatever. Let's just say it was, for example, like a couple of $1 million or whatever. Now, I could go and put a couple of $1 million into that thing, and then all the money's tied up and it's not working for me. It's just in one single asset. Or I could rent, right? Which might be like throwing money out the window. But that's like, to me, it's like you can get the thing. Let me give you another example. I've had a vision for some time that I wanted to create like a big kind of luxury gym facility, health and wellness facility, all just beautiful and health, wellness, fitness, big gym, ice baths, saunas, restaurants, the whole thing. That whole project in my mind's eye would probably cost me about $50 million, right? Now, it just so happens that I've found a place just down the road from 15 minutes on a scooter ride from where I am right now that basically has everything that I just mentioned. It pretty much is the exact vision that I had. Do you know how much it's going to cost me to like get the same dream, to rent the dream, to go and use their facility?
$100 a month.
Yeah, I think it's $126 a month for the gym and everything like that. It's like, it's crazy. So not 50 million, 126. And so you can get the things you want. Now, I just want to qualify the Grant Cardone thing a little bit further. Now, when I was earlier on in my journey, I was so fueled by all of Grant Cardone stuff, and I have a huge amount of respect for the guy. I think he's awesome in a lot of ways. I fairly recently spent a decent amount of money to be able to get closer to him, to, you know, in a kind of like an exclusive kind of meet and greet type scenario, because I wanted to get closer and understand it. And in that moment, I realized I didn't want what he had. Now, you can look at him and say, oh, he's a billionaire and he's got whatever, two helicopters and a couple of jets and he's doing all that kind of stuff. And like, man, dude, salute. Like, that's awesome. It's brilliant. Like full credit to the guy. You know, it sounds fun. But I realized I didn't want what he had. What I wanted was something that was more fulfilling. And what I realized was that you've got to be really careful on choosing your profits, P-R-O-P-H-E-T-S, right? To make sure that you're modeling the right people in the right ways. Now, 10X, I think, is brilliant. But you can think about how to 10X in different ways. It's not just financial. So I have a very strong belief that self-actualization is the only worthy goal. It's not about making $1 million. It's not about buying 100 houses. It's about becoming the best version of yourself. And it's the biggest game that we can ever potentially play, because it's a never-ending game. There is no bookend, because as you get better, you unlock more levels and you continually sharpen the sword. Now, in that spectrum of becoming the best version of yourself, yes, absolutely. Finance is a significant part of it. Yes, absolutely. You want to make sure that you are meeting all of the needs of yourself financially so that you can achieve all of the goals that you want. You don't want to find yourself, you know, truncated by your lack of ambition. But I also know people that are exceptionally wealthy that have basically no money because they live off the land and they just, you know, like they've got a lifestyle which absolutely is 100% in line with their values, right? And so finance plays a part in it. You get to decide how much finance plays a part in it. So I definitely think 10Xing your life is a fantastic point of view to have, but there's far more to life than just the money side of the equation.
Yeah. And what you mentioned is really that lifestyle design.
Mm-hmm.
You know, envisioning how you want your life to look in a perfect world and then trying to reverse engineer it from there. So what's an exercise or what's some advice you have for people that, you know, feel stuck in their job, they're not super happy where they're at, and they want to design the perfect lifestyle for them? You know, what are some of the steps they got to take, or what are some of the questions they should ask themselves to create that lifestyle design they're looking for?
So the first question to ask yourself is, what do you really want? And most people just never ask themselves that. And what do you really want? Like, what do you really, really, really want? Because the first answer might be like, I want a Lamborghini. So then you've got to go through that. And I said, like, okay, so let's just imagine I've got the Lamborghini. Like, then what? Oh, then I'd drive it around and I'd feel cool. Like, okay, and then what? And then what? And then what? So first you've got to ask yourself, like, what do you really, really, really want? That can actually be the most revealing question that you can ask yourself. Like, firstly, ask yourself, are you happy? And if not, why not? And then what would need to be true in your life for you to feel happiness? Because we have this, and we can get to some I want to break this down a little bit further. I think it's really important, but I'm just going to go on a little side quest for a moment, if that's all right. Because we tend to have this idea that life is a journey between a whole bunch of destinations. You know, we're born and then we grow up, we go to school and then we go to high school and then we go get a job and then we go and work and then we make some money and then eventually we retire and then we go get to do the things we want. And it's kind of like this linear pathway between all of these destinations, not dissimilar from getting in a car and traveling around the US or any other country and going from town to town, from stop to stop, from here to there, from place to place. But the question you've really got to ask yourself is that actually what life is? Is life actually a journey? Or is it a dance? Because in the spectrum of what life is, the most appropriate context we can give it is the context of music. You know, music in and of itself doesn't have a specific purpose. It's there to be experienced. And when you lose yourself dancing to the music, you're not trying to work out, how do I get from this point on the dance floor to that point on the dance floor? I'm going to dance from here to there, and then I'm going to dance from there to there, and then eventually I'm going to dance over there, and that's when I will have won dancing. Not at all. The point is to dance. The point is to feel the music and to embrace the experience of it. That, I think, is a far better analogy for what life is than a journey. Now, in order to then tease this out and work out what your dance looks like, how are you going to dance? You need to start asking yourself some questions. You need to start looking at your life and asking, what do I need to change in my current set of circumstances to bring me closer to that happiness, that fulfillment, that joy, that dance? And there's many variations on this idea, but I've broken it down into six areas that tend to work well for me. And that's health and wellness, family and relationships, business and career, finance and wealth, learning and development, and lifestyle and location. And so from a practical exercise perspective, because a lot of people are going to try and work this out and they're going to be scratching their heads and going, I don't know, right? Break it down into those six areas. Literally just, you don't need anything sophisticated. Get a spreadsheet on Google Sheets if you want to collaborate with someone, or just get a pen and paper and write down the headline, health and wellness, right? What do I want? Like, what needs to change in my life for me to feel better about myself? Is it losing 10 pounds? Is it gaining 10 pounds of muscle? Is it like, you know, being able to run 5 miles? Whatever the case may be, like, work that out and use that as a starting point, as a reference. Now, break it down in all of those six areas. You get to start asking yourself different questions, like, how important is this area to you? So, for example, family and relationships are not super high on my value chain. Now, I love my family, love my friends, but it's not super high on my value chain. So for me, that's not an area that I feel like I need to like massively deeply invest in. There's other areas that are really important to me. So you get to ask yourself, you know, how important is that area to you? What does good look like in that area? What personal goals or aspirations do you have in that area? And why do you have these feelings? Like, why is that important to you? Because I can tell you, I've also had those grandiose pursuits of the big and gargantuan and like, I'm going to own a super yacht. I had a fixation on owning a super yacht for a really long period of time. Don't get me wrong, a super yacht would be cool. Like a super yacht, I'm not going to say no. Like if I get to a point where I can afford the super yacht, look, it's awesome. I'll still probably get to the point and go, I'll probably just rent it for a week. But you know, the point is, there's not a problem with the super yachts. There's not a problem with wanting to experience those things. But you get to ask yourself those questions and then start to tease it out. And the more that you ask yourself these questions, specifically thinking through those six areas in life, the more you'll start to work out what is the rhythm that you're trying to dance to. That's when it'll start to make sense.
Interesting. The rhythm you're trying to dance to. And as you're explaining that, I'm trying to think about what's the rhythm that I'm trying to dance to? Because you made your list of the categories and put them in order of what's important to you. And relationships is not that important to you. And I'm like, what's important to me? And it's health. It's feeling good. It's having high energy levels. It's being able to run a marathon. It's feeling good inside my body, right? So like, what am I doing that aligns with that? Well, I'm up every single day at 5 a.m. I ran 5 miles this morning and I swam 2,200 yards this morning, all before my work, right? And I already feel amazing. I already had an amazing day and I'm having this conversation with you. So, you know, that would be a really good exercise for all the listeners to do. So guys, if you're listening and you want to do this exercise, make a list of the things that are most important to you. It was health and relationships, money, experiences, and I forgot the other couple ones there.
I'll list them off. Health and wellness, right? Okay. I mean, put these in any order, right? The order doesn't matter. The categories do. Health and wellness, family and relationships, business and career, finance and wealth, learning and development, lifestyle and location. Because there's also, I think, you know, in terms of, I'll just kind of expand on that too. And the reason why these are important to understand is because I believe that there are three key factors that are required for anyone to escape the status quo. Now, we started this conversation by talking about how do people make $100,000? Because ostensibly, that's going to help them create more freedom, right? Now, the reality is, I think it's absolutely everyone's greatest responsibility to work out how to escape the status quo, how to get out of the norm, right? And I think that anyone can do it. Now, it comes down to really, in my opinion, focusing on mastering three key areas. Those key areas that you need to try and master is location independence. So how do you not be economically constrained to a specific location? So live wherever you want. It doesn't mean you need to be a digital nomad. You might specifically want to live in Miami, for example, if that is your choice, but you're not economically constrained to be there. So location independence, financial freedom, and there's three phases to financial freedom. We can dig into that a little bit if you want. And then self-actualization, which is becoming the best version of yourself. Now, I'll just touch on the best version of yourself piece a little bit as well, because and you started to talk about this just a moment ago, because what's important to you is like feeling energized, health and fitness, all these kind of things, right? Now, the best version of yourself is going to be specifically dictated by what your personal values are, which is why it's really, really interesting, because the best version of myself might not be the best version of yourself. We're going to be different because we're going to have different values. So then you get to align your activities with your personal values. Now, you may have status might actually be one of your highest values, in which case the Rolex and the Lamborghini and all that might be perfect for your version of your best life of you, right? But it might not be for somebody else. So really starting to understand that values piece is really key to unlocking what the rest of it looks like as well.
So what does self-actualization mean to you, and how are you on your journey of self-actualization, and how are you going to fulfill that?
So as I mentioned, self-actualization in its simplest context is becoming the best version of yourself. Now, Abraham Maslow had this, he came up with this Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Some people are going to be familiar with it. And there's five levels to it. So the five levels are the base level. The thing you have to get sorted before everything else is your physiological needs. So things like air, food, water, shelter, like basic survival type stuff. Then the second layer, once you get over like, can I eat? Can I breathe? Can I drink? These kind of basic things. Do I have a place to sleep? Then it goes into safety. So personal security, you know, like how can I sleep at night without worrying that I'm going to get eaten by lions? Or, you know, it also goes economically as well. Like do I have a stable source of income? That's also comes into the safety and security kind of component of it. The next level above that is love and belonging, right? So that's where you start thinking about your friendships and that becomes really important, because of course, if you have no safety, like having a girlfriend or boyfriend doesn't really matter either, right? So love and belonging goes above that. Then it's self-esteem, so respect for yourself and others. Then above that is self-actualization. Now, most people never get to the place of self-actualization, but you can do that specifically by focusing on your core values and how you get there. Now, self-actualization is the desire to become all that you can be, which is really, really cool. Because that is not a destination. Nobody becomes self-actualized. You don't like, all right, I've climbed the hill and now I'm fully actualized. Yay! Because then what, right? Because then you've got ego and it's like, you know, you've got to then go work all that out. So the thing that I love about self-actualization and why I think it's the only worthy goal is because it's a continuous pursuit of personal excellence. There is no end to the game. It's fully fractal, just like the universe. Like the universe is completely infinite in all ways. We're infinite in all ways. We're made of nothing and everything all at once. And this is the essence of self-actualization as well, to go deeper and deeper and deeper on oneself. Now, for me personally, just how I'm doing it, the way that I am and doing that is I really spend a lot of time thinking about, like, am I living my best life? Like, what is that? And like, how would I know? Like, what is that to me? And, you know, I've discovered a lot of things on my relatively short time on this, earth so far. I'm 37 years old. But, you know, some of the things that I've realized is that I really like experiences. I really like travel. I really want to see the world. So for me, traveling and experiencing all of those new things is really, really important. But interestingly, I also really like routine and structure. So I like to go places and get like as local as possible, as quickly as possible, get a routine. And so for me, I just like to continuously see where that journey will take me because I understand my personal values and I keep pushing those too. So, for example, my personal values are growth, impact, and freedom. They're like three of my highest values. Now, freedom for me is, you know, the freedom to do what I want, where I want, with who I want, freedom of location, you know, economic freedom, all of these kind of things. It doesn't mean necessarily for me owning lots of really expensive, shiny things. Although, if that is your thing, then totally cool. Like, I have no problem with that. I'm not going to critique it. It's totally fine. You know, impact for me as well. It's like we started the business with $5,000, no safety net, no backup, no nothing. So we had, safe to say, we were not really economically sound. We got to a point in the business where we realized, like a couple of years in, that we realized if we sold the business, we would have enough money to feasibly not have to work again. Not to be stupidly rich, but to not have to work again, to be able to just like retire and sail off into the sunset. And I realized at that point that that's not what it was about. And said so my partner and I, we sort of looked at each other and we went, oh, okay, we can do that thing now. I guess that's not what we were in it for, because otherwise we'd just sell the business and go do the thing. And so realistically, then it became far more about impact. So even now, like, why are we still growing the business? Because we can impact more lives and more people. Why am I on this podcast trying to share ideas? Why? Because I want to impact more people. I'm not here to try and sell anything. I don't have a book. I don't have a course. I don't have anything. And nobody who's listening to this is going to engage with my company. I have no economic interest in being here. The only reason I'm here is because I want to reach more people and try and help them escape the status quo. And so leaning into those things that are important to me, my values, gives me the opportunity to continuously find those edges of myself and work out how do I continuously grow into the best version of myself.
Yeah. And when it comes to impact, I've noticed you've been posting amazing YouTube videos lately. You've been really going hard on YouTube and you got a couple really good videos up there. How to make your first $1 million, mm-hmm. How to be a digital nomad, things like that. Is YouTube something you're really focused on right now?
You know what's really interesting? I clearly don't have a problem with communication. I found that I actually have not been enjoying creating those YouTube videos. It's really fascinating. So what I love is I love sharing the ideas. What I love is I love hearing people say, man, I watched that video and it really changed my life. And I've implemented something and, you know, I've had a big change. I love that. But what I realized is, and this is, again, I think, being aware of yourself enough to self-analyze, right, and understanding the difference between, just like friction because something's hard. The direct, like me just talking to a camera with nobody else there, I find it really personally quite difficult. It's not insurmountable, but you've got to think about things like, does this bring me joy? Does it take the joy away? And I actually have found now that's something that I get to work on, right, because I do believe that, you know, My real purpose here on earth is to inspire millions of people to create positive change in their life. So that can be something I get to work on. And yeah, I'm very proud of what we have been doing on YouTube, but also in the same context, it's difficult, which is good. It's good to do hard things. It's good to challenge yourself and good to find those edges. Yeah.
Yeah. And sharing this message, because your message is going to help other people reach financial freedom through real estate.
Yeah. Well, I think that there's several ways of doing it, right? My business, I'm very proud of what we've done. We're fundamentally changing the way people invest in real estate in Australia specifically, and we will be going to the US as well. And we've helped about 1,200 people so far to fundamentally change their lives. Not all of them are financially free just yet, but they're well and truly on their way. Like, we've developed really crazy technology to be able to do all this. It's very, you know, we could nerd out on the data science for like the next couple of hours if you want. All right, but going back to the point that I said at the very start of this, like, real estate is the single best way for 99% of people on planet Earth to build wealth. And to that degree, it's the single largest asset class on Earth, larger than all of the stock exchanges put together. There's no asset class that is larger than residential real estate, yet it's fundamentally the least understood. And so for most people, that's going to be the best pathway to progress through the three stages of financial freedom. So there's financial confidence, then there's financial security, and then there's financial independence. They're the three different phases. To get to financial security is that's a big landmark for people. And I really love helping people to get there. In fact, we've got a mission to help 5,000 people achieve financial security by 2033, which is, it's a bigger goal than it sounds. When you say 5,000, it doesn't sound like a lot when you've got a lot of people on the internet saying like, I'm going to help a billion people. But it's a lot. It's a lot, actually, because where you want to get people to is to the point where their net worth is such that if it were fully liquidated, they would be able to take care of themselves and their family for at least a few years. Now, that's really, excuse my language, fucking cool, because I know people that have been impacted by that specific landmark. Getting to a point where maybe they don't have enough income coming from their portfolio that they can like retire and travel the world, but they've maybe built up, you know, several hundred thousand dollars of equity in their portfolio through growth and stuff like that, maybe even like $1 million. I know someone whose partner got cancer, and they, you know, so basically neither of them worked, right? So he became a full-time carer for his partner for like 4 years. Thankfully, she survived and they got through it and all of that kind of stuff. But being able to take four years off work to take care of the family, and was able to do that, sold down the entire portfolio to do that, but was in a position to be able to do that for like 4, maybe 5 years before having to re-enter the workforce. That's the kind of thing you can do when you build financial security. Best way to do that is with real estate. So for 99% of people, I think that is going to be the 100% the best move. And that's why, like, I actually don't care about real estate. I'm not one of those real estate guys that like nerds out on it and it's like, oh my God, I love property. It's like, I really don't care. I really love solving really big complex problems, and the real estate market is one of the biggest. It's probably the biggest and most complex problem you can solve in many ways, particularly in a financial sense. And I love helping people. So, from that context, I'm super passionate about it. But I'm also, you know, not one to like want to go, you know, just nerd out on property all day long either. Right? So
real estate is very popular right now, and it's been popular since COVID. Obviously, owning rental properties. I have two properties myself. Owning rental properties is an amazing way to create cash flow. And I bought my first rental in 2016, and you know, it's tripled in value pretty much. And you know, collecting cash on it every single month. I've collected probably twice as much in rent than I even paid for the property. Right. So it was definitely like a grand slam. And then bought another one. And like try to just rinse and repeat, right?
Where did you buy? Can I ask? Can I ask? Like,
yeah, I bought in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. My first property was a one-bedroom condo. It's 500 square feet, has no washer and dryer, and I paid $92,000 for it. And as soon as I bought it, I rented it out for $1,800 a month in season, December through March, to a guy that was contracted here to work at FPNL, which is a company under NextEra Energy, you know, multi-billion-dollar company. And he ended up renting for like 5 months at $1,800 a month. And then the next day he moved out. I got someone in there for $1,400 a month for 2 years. Wow. And then when he moved out, I moved into it for a little bit because I was in between leases. And in South Florida, season is the winter, December through March. Everyone from the Northeast where it snows wants to move down to Florida, play golf, and go to the beach in the winter because we live in heaven on earth. And rental values skyrocket for those shorter term leases.
Yep.
And so I was doing that every year. And then, you know, now I got a full-time renter in there. Rent has gone up like 20% again. So collecting $2,000 in rent right now.
It's awesome.
So, you know, it's definitely a grand slam for sure. Wish I would have bought a couple more. But when I think about my self-actualization, especially when it comes to personal finance, I like stocks better. Because it's less of a headache.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously I can hire a property manager because I only have two. I don't need one. I can handle it myself. But don't get me wrong. Like, you know, my tenants do call me. and I'm not good with a screwdriver in my hand.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people do shoddy work, and it turns, you know, a small problem can turn into a big problem. So real estate is not as glamorous as people make it sound on TikTok, but real estate is very popular right now. And everyone that's 20 to 22 years old wants to get into real estate. So someone that's listening, and the biggest demographic of people that listen to this podcast are between the ages of 25 and 35, and they want to get into real estate. What's some advice you have for them?
So I 100% agree with you, by the way. There's way easier ways to invest. There's easier ways to invest. You want something that's low hassle, just go and put your money in stocks. But really what you need to be thinking about is what is the return profile that you're looking for. Now, the US has a specific focus on cash flow. Just for contextualization, the US has much higher yields and much higher cash flow than, say, Australia, or in fact, many other parts of the world. Like, it's a really good cash flow market. But interestingly, there's also really good ways that you can find growth, right? And you've experienced that yourself because your property's tripled in value. That's where the real money's made. And so what can happen in real estate is a lot of people can fixate on small costs, like, oh my God, I've got to pay a property manager a couple of percent or whatever. Oh, that's going to hurt my cash flow. It's like, yeah, but dude, like, you could be making hundreds of thousands of dollars in growth as well, right? So you got to zoom out. So my first piece of advice would be to, you know, don't burn dollars. You look at it pennies, basically. I think it's like, it's crazy the amount of people who do that. I don't want to be too blasé about it, but I don't even care how much the maintenance is. We have property managers for all our properties, and I'm just like, okay, just like, oh, there's a leak. Okay, pay someone to fix it. Because I want the least amount of input as possible, because my time is a consideration in ROI.
Right.
Now, that being said, yeah, I mean, stuff goes wrong all the time. Like, oh, I need a new roof or a new door or whatever. And you can mitigate some of that risk, but there's always going to be some of that there. You've got to play a bigger game. The biggest thing I think people need to do is look outside of their own backyard. Because statistically speaking, the likelihood of you finding the most optimal time and place to invest, and that being specifically in your local neighborhood, is just really unlikely. Like, it is so unlikely that if you perpetuate that idea that you need to buy locally, you're almost certain to be buying the wrong property in the wrong place at the wrong time. And when we started our business in Australia, like, the idea of like borderless investing is what we call it, That was a completely new concept. We have to try and educate a market like, hey, did you know that you can buy a property on the other side of the country? People are like, what the hell? Like, what do you mean? But fundamentally, that's how you get all the gains, because a lot of people think you can't time the real estate market. But if you truly believe that you can't time the real estate market and that there is no good or bad time to invest, then it literally doesn't matter what you buy or where you just go buy. Ready. Just buy anything. Just buy.
Doesn't matter when you buy.
Doesn't matter when you buy. Doesn't matter where you buy. Just go buy real estate. Just go and watch how that'll work out for you. Not very well. So I think that people need to broaden their horizons and to start thinking more macro as well. And when I say thinking more macro, I mean actually starting to think, what is going to drive real estate markets? Now, an interesting thing in the US market is the move to the Sun Belts.
So you were saying, look outside of your own backyard.
Look outside of your own backyard, right? And you know, there's lots of ways you can do that. So because we were looking at expanding our technology into the US, I actually did a fair bit of research on the US market. And the US market is really from a property technology perspective, it's really advanced on property intelligence, right? And what I mean by property intelligence is trying to, like, analyzing specific individual deals. Now, the reason that is really interesting to me is because someone in San Diego, for example, is trying to find the best deal in San Diego, but they're not actually asking the question, is San Diego even the right place to be buying? And so zooming, getting a layer above that and actually trying to look at what we call real estate market intelligence. And there's a couple of really good providers. I can't remember off the top of my head, but I remember looking at the landscape and going, okay, there's a couple of really interesting real estate market intelligence providers. That's the kind of level you want to be looking at. And when you start looking at that level, it comes down to some really kind of big features. And these features really apply anywhere. It's jobs, lifestyle, and affordability, right? We call this the holy trinity of location selection.
Yeah.
And so the thing about that is, you know, for example, you might have a place that's got a crazy amount of jobs, but it could be somewhere that no one wants to live. So an example of that in Australia is we have big mining projects in the outback in the middle of nowhere, right? And they they employ a lot of people that get paid a whole ton of money, and absolutely no one wants to live there. So shitty real estate market. So what you want to look for is not just where are the jobs going, but like where is the lifestyle? Like where is it people that people actually want to live? And what is the affordability? Now, the interesting thing about affordability is relative local affordability, right? So it's what is the relative affordability based on the average incomes in that specific area? Because if the average income is really, really high, and you can still have an affordable market based on, you know, a high income if it's relatively lower. Now, what's really interesting about that in the US is you're seeing a big push to the Sun Belt, right? So the reason for that is because of high degrees of mobility. People in places like Chicago are going like, why the hell are we living somewhere cold? Hang on a second, this doesn't make any sense. Because once upon a time, we were all really geographically constrained to our specific places of work. Now, remote work, becoming more digital, all this kind of stuff has really opened up people's eyes to go, maybe I don't actually need to live here. Like, even if I still work in Chicago, for example, I could go and live, I don't know, bloody Texas or something like that, where it's warmer, or Costa Rica for that matter. Like, and this is really what's changing global real estate markets. And so there are some universal principles that apply, but basically everywhere, right? And that's the lifestyle, jobs, and affordability is one of the key ones. You see that on a global scale. This is one of the things I find most interesting. Like I was just living in Bali for the last 18 months. Man, like I wasn't in a position for a couple of reasons to buy. Like when we first got over to Bali, like just after all the lockdowns and all of that kind of stuff. Man, like rents, prices, everything like doubled and tripled in like a year. It was insane. For the same reasons, people are able to remote work. So there was like job availability plus lifestyle and affordability. And so these things kind of play out on a global scale. So there's a couple of ideas that I think would benefit for pretty much anyone who's investing, particularly in the US.
Yeah. Now, I want to talk about microeconomics when it comes to real estate in America. So right now, interest rates are above 8%. Mm. The housing market is basically still at all-time highs. Inventory is extremely low. There's not a lot to buy out there right now. Everyone that bought a house or refinanced before, you know, June of 2022 has a rate below 3.25%. Those people are never selling, right? So, you know, where do you think it goes from here? If you had a magic ball, right? And you could predict what's going to happen over the next 5 years, what would you say?
Massively up. And I'm not just saying this because I'm, you know, a real estate guy, right? And I'm not just trying to be like unnecessarily bullish. Like I have no vested interest in people going and buying heaps of real estate in the US. Like I don't. So just think about that. But you've actually got to look at what is the underlying context around these kind of things. It's really, really fascinating. Now in the US, it's interesting because you have like non-recourse loans, and so that's why there's the US market is a little more volatile than other markets because you have non-recourse loans. So there's some interesting fiscal policy stuff there. But to your point, there's a lot of people that own properties right now that because they own the loan at a certain rate, right? Like the worst thing they could do is sell it. So the bottom is not going to fall out of the market. Now, what is extremely, no one's got a crystal ball, but what is extremely likely to happen based on all historical reference points is that interest rates are going to go down again. And so what's going to happen when your interest rates go down again, right? Affordability goes up. Now, I will point out something that's really, really counterintuitive. And I had some very smart PhD data scientists working on this. Interest rates aren't actually a key driver of property prices. It sounds crazy, but it's actually 100% true. In fact, it had such a minimal correlation with real estate prices that it's fair to say that that interest rates don't affect property prices. Now, some other things do, like again, relative affordability. So that's really, really interesting. So if you've now real estate markets in the US again work a little bit differently to the Australian markets, but if you have prices rising in areas that are more expensive than the relative affordability, relative locally, then that actually could cause price decline. So we saw that in Sydney, for example. So in Sydney, in Australia, you know, the relative affordability in that market was really, really low. Like people were really stretching to try and buy in that market. Like the prices versus the income, crazy. So then when interest rates went up, like the relative affordability got worse, which actually made that specific market decline a bit. But the rest of the market was going up, like it was crazy. So you really got to kind of think about that context. Now, I'm a pretty firm believer that till, you know, probably till about 2026, late 2026, we're going to see real estate markets boom. What happens after that, I don't really know. But that's my strong belief. I think that fundamentally, because of supply chain issues over the last few years, we have a tremendous housing shortage, particularly in Australia, but globally, right? In the US, for sure, 100%. Interest rates, again, are going to come down and normalize. Like, there is a lot of wealth and cash sloshing around in the economy. You know, there's a huge amount of migration and people are pushing into areas that don't have the infrastructure for it, which is driving a lot of markets. So I really believe that as an asset class, it's very strong. And look, I say that cautiously, by the way, because I actually think it's going to cause problems. Like, you see a lot of people right now, and to your point that you made earlier, man, like, people can barely even afford rent. Yeah, I get it. And you know what's probably going to get a hell of a lot worse. And so on the one hand, I'm looking at this going, oh my God, opportunity of a lifetime. This is about to go, it's going to shoot. It's one direction it's going to go and it's up. And on the other hand, I'm like, holy shit, what about the people? Like, it's crazy. Like, I say it, but I don't think it's good. But you don't really have many options. What are you going to do? You're going to participate or are you going to sit it out? Like, that's kind of how you need to think about it.
Right. Will prices ever get to below pre-COVID or pre-pandemic levels again?
Highly doubt it.
Highly doubt it. I agree.
I highly doubt it. I can't. For that to happen, there would need to be a major systemic crash, like larger than the 2008 crash, right? So that's the kind of thing that would have to happen. And then even if that did happen, it would only be temporary anyway. And so anyone who's, and this is the thing, right? So if you go back to the 1970s and look at the newspaper headlines back in the 1970s, what were the headlines? Real estate prices, it's booming, it's a bubble, it's too expensive, no one can afford it, they can't, it's not sustainable. Look, in the 80s, what was it saying? Real estate prices are too expensive. It's not sustainable. 90s, same thing. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. Now, the reason for that is because we have an expanding economy. And if you want to understand how and why the economy expands, it's based on productivity per capita, right? And so the reality is that through the continuous development of technology in our societies, we are increasing our productivity per capita. And there's essentially no limit to our economic potential as long as we can increase productivity per capita, which is why AI is really, really interesting, right? So, yeah, I think some people are going to lose jobs and all that kind of stuff. And fine, but people lost jobs when the tractor came into the market as well. So all of this kind of stuff is just part and parcel with change and growth. But as the economy continues to expand, so will the real estate market, particularly when you've got constrained supply and a high degree of demand in those specific areas. I mean, just like look at Singapore's real estate market, for example. Like, it's crazy.
Crazy. I don't know much about Singapore's real estate market, but I know a little bit about the real estate market here, and it's crazy over here. So if you're saying Singapore is crazy, I can't even imagine what's going on over there.
Yeah. Well, so Singapore has had a huge amount of demand for like the last 20, 30 years, but it's got very constrained supply because it's a tiny little island nation, right? And so I think it's still got the most expensive real estate in the world is in Singapore. So there's like Singapore, Hong Kong, Sydney, New York, and I think they're the four most expensive cities in the world. But Hong Kong and Singapore are specifically constrained. Like, you're talking like tens of millions of dollars for like a shitty apartment somewhere, right? it's like beyond insane. But that's not going to go down anytime soon because the fundamentals that underpin that are there. So, you know, and I don't see – you know, the worst thing that you might see is a flat line, I think. But that would have, I don't see that happening, but yeah, it's not going to go down.
Yeah, and that would be a good opportunity to buy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because even worst case scenario, you don't get any growth, but you're still going to get a ton of cash flow out of it. So like, why wouldn't you buy? And this is the thing, a lot of people like sit on the fence about whether or not they should invest. And it's like, okay, well, let's walk through some scenarios. Let's say you buy a property and the market goes up. Well, great, you've made heaps of money. Brilliant. Let's say you buy a property and the market doesn't go up. Okay, well, what will typically happen in those markets particularly is yields tend to go higher. So gross yields tend to go higher. So you tend to get more cash flow. All right, so worst case scenario, you get cash flow. Best case scenario, you get growth and cash flow. Okay, where's the downside? And so there's no real, in my opinion, bad time to buy real estate. The only way that you can kind of come unstuck is if you have misaligned expectations. So, for example, if you're like, I'm going to get in and this property is going to go from $100,000 to $200,000 and that's how I'm going to make all my money. And then if it doesn't do that, then it's like, oh my God, real estate sucks because my expectations were incorrect. Whereas realistically, on a long enough time horizon, you know, it's got 100% success rate, so which is rare.
Well, Goose, listen, I want to thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy day to hop on the podcast and interviewing you all the way from Phuket, Thailand. This was really awesome. To all those people out there that are listening on Audible, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts, you can check Goose out on YouTube at Goose McGrath. That's GooseMcGrath. Goose, is there any last words you got for the audience today?
My only suggestion to anyone listening would be just to take the time to actually ask yourself what you really want and then just pursue whatever that vision of good looks like to you. And don't let anyone stand in your way.
Love that. This was a great question. You know, I was looking forward to talking about personal finance, but I think we went way deeper than that. And I think this is a super valuable, I know this is a super valuable episode that my audience is going to love. So thank you so much, Goose, for being on the podcast today. It was a pleasure. And I look forward to connecting again soon.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.